we're going to go to the phone, because on Wednesday, when the British MPs were back in the House of Commons after the Supreme Court ruled about prorogation, but instead of getting down to business of any real substance, an argument broke out in the House over what some have labelled as toxic language being used by Prime Minister Boris Johnson, which they say is inflammatory and incites violence. Now, an unrepentant Mr. Johnson responded by saying that the best way to honour the memory of the murdered MP Joe Cox was to get Brexit done. Well, Kim Ledbetter is Joe Cox's sister, and she's on the line now. And thank you very much indeed for joining us. It's not as though you, interest in all senses of the word, family interest, political interest, and so on. What was your reaction and your family's reaction to the events in the House of Commons this week?
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
It was a very difficult week for us. We've spent 3 years trying to build a very positive legacy for Joe by bringing people together and lots of community activation and tackling important issues that Joe felt passionately about, like loneliness. And unfortunately, we're now spending our time trying to use her foundation as a way of calming things down, which I think is really important. We were very upset when we saw the scenes play out in the Commons on Wednesday evening. And I think my message and our message as a family is that everybody now needs to take a step back, think about the language they're using, think about the way that they're behaving, and think about how we can treat each other with respect and civility and find a way of moving forwards. And this, for me, is across the political spectrum. If we go back over the past 3 years, we've seen divisive, non-helpful language from people, you know, representing different parties. And we now need to look for some proper moral leadership from both the Prime Minister, the Leader of the Opposition, and indeed all parliamentarians.
That sounds very fine and admirable. Can you see any evidence of it showing up anywhere? The Prime Minister was on the telly this morning with Andrew Marr, completely unrepentant.
Well, it will only change if everybody is prepared to change. And you know, he did say some things that, which gave me a little bit of hope in terms of, you know, he does understand the fear that politicians are feeling in terms of their own safety, and it's a very real fear. We have politicians being threatened and abused on a daily basis, and again, this is across the Brexit divide, it's across the political spectrum. I think he has a little bit of time to reflect and has moved somewhere to helping, but he certainly needs to do more.
Did your sister genuinely feel threatened? You know, was it an immediate sense of threat? And looking up the court case and the murderer, like, had she really taken them seriously or done what people sometimes do and say, oh, that's just another nutter?
No, Joe hadn't had any specific threats.
Right.
She'd had the odd bit of abuse on social media, and she'd had the odd bit of, you know, a few bits and pieces, but nothing serious. I mean, I think the reality is this has got progressively worse in the last 3 years.
Why do you think?
I think there's lots of reasons. I mean, Brexit clearly has a huge part to play in that it has not only created division, but it has unearthed lots of issues that I think were already there, people's disillusion with politics, you know, people's problems within their own communities. I think there's lots of issues that have come to the fore. And I think, unfortunately, as I say, because we've had bad behaviour from people in public life, I think there is a lot of anger, there is a lot of frustration in communities up and down the country. But, you know, as I say, the big thing for me now is we have to draw a line under this. And there's absolutely no point going back over the past few years and saying, he said this or she said that, because we've seen bad behaviour and we've seen inappropriate language, as I say, across the board. But we now have to work together to draw a line under it. So we have to find a way through the Brexit debate, but we have to do it with humanity. We have to do it with passion, but also with compassion.
Yeah, I'm just looking at an account of the man that murdered your sister. And as he was doing so, he was shouting Britain first. And he later told the court that his name was, quote, death to traitors, freedom for Britain. And there were special rules attached to his sentence. He got life in prison, but only to be released by the Secretary of State. Now, you have an organisation called What Is more in common. And that was set up in your sister's honour.
Well, the organisation is actually the Joe Cox Foundation.
Yeah.
More in Common is a local group of volunteers that I chair who have worked at a local level to unite our community and done some amazing things on the ground. But it's the Joe Cox Foundation, of which I am an ambassador for.
Okay.
And we're currently working across the political spectrum. We've got a standard of conduct that we're working on, which we're going to ask this week all the leaders of the political parties to sign up to. And we're working
with the committee on standards and public life. Which will include what kinds of things?
The detail is what we're working on. We've been working on it since May.
Yeah.
And we probably weren't quite ready to go live with it, but I think last week's activities have forced our hands somewhat. So we're working on that at the moment. There's a draft being done, and it's been done with Lord Jonathan Evans, who is the chair of the Committee for Standards in Public Life. So we'll be taking more action on that this week. But yeah, I mean, it's really important that everybody signs up for this. And within that, I also include, you know, politicians signing up to a standard of conduct, but also the media looking at the role they play and the responsibility they have. One of my problems or weaknesses is I always try and see all the sides of an argument, but actually that doesn't often make very exciting headlines because you end up with the boring beige, you know, bit in the middle.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So I think, you know, and that's how we were brought up. That's how Joe and I were brought up, to think about things from different perspectives, to empathise, to try and understand. And we're not seeing much of that in the political arena at the moment.
Well, it's funny you talk about the newspapers, because with all of the programmes going on, I think it was Boris Johnson's sister, Rachel, who brought up this question of the coarsening of language and the coarsening of discourse, and said that it started way back, and she went through the newspapers, and that nobody cried halt.
Oh, well, to be fair, we've been speaking about this issue for the past 3 years, and we've been seeing the way that things have been going. And, you know, we've been trying to use the Joe Cox Foundation to try and highlight this as a very dangerous situation where somebody has to draw a line under it. But you know, you're absolutely right. You can see all over social media things that people in the Labour Party have said, things that people in the Conservative Party have said, and other parties as well. Very violent language, very combative language, brutal and aggressive. And this is why I'm saying it will only change if everybody takes a step back.
Right.
And the media as well, in the terms of the headlines that they use.
Yeah.
But again, I understand everybody's got a job to do. You know, politicians have got a very difficult job to do at the moment. Journalists have got a job to do in terms of selling newspapers and making interesting programmes. But we've all got a job to actually put the country first,
right,
and find a way of uniting people.
Well, I mean, presumably you'd have a perspective on what is perceived with some reason as Mr. Johnson's strategy, which is to turn people against all politics and institutions.
Yeah, I mean, again, I always try and be objective. I always try and be fair. Some of the things that he said in Parliament the other night could certainly be perceived as a strategic way of causing division. I would also maybe hope that some of the things he said, well, because it was a very heated debate and he's had a chance to reflect on those things, and I think would look to consider his words and his actions in the coming weeks and months to try and calm things down rather than stoke it.
Oh.
But we've got to, you know, he's a very divisive character, as is Jeremy Corbyn. You know, we are, let's be fair, we're lacking very strong moral leadership, I think, in politics at the moment.
Can I come to you, Mary Cross? You've been around diplomatic tables all your life. How do you get people in the kind of heat of battle? And God, there was so much anger displayed last week. No pretend anger, real anger. How do you get people to cool down and to take the kind of advice that Kim Ledbetter might give? She speaks from some authority.
Yes, and she speaks in such a dignified way. It's really astonishing. Yes, in discussions and over meetings and over the years, there have been emotions displayed, and particularly where national interests are involved and people fear they're not winning and they're losing. What is generally done then is that you take a break, and then you have a discussion to try and tease out the various issues with the people involved, and you come back back, and generally things have calmed down. But the way of doing it is to have discussions about what are the issues that are important to people, where you can find consensus, because
you'd need a good searchlight at the moment.
Yes, but that is the only way through. You know, there is no other way except try to break it down, see what are the important issues, where you can go with them, because there's no point in being stuck in a deadlock. You just have to move it forward. And, you know, that's something the EU, which operates mainly on consensus, is very good at doing.
Yeah.
But take a break, talk to the people, get back again.
John?
Well, the problem, I think, is that brilliant people like Mary and her colleagues and people in the House of Commons are playing by conventional rules. Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings have entered this new world where they've torn up the rule book. It's the Steve Bannon playbook from the United States. And I think they have deliberately injected this incendiary rhetoric, repeating these terms over and over again, like the surrender bill. And that isn't the half of it. We had one Brexit advocate on Friday on BBC openly calling for rioting if Brexit isn't delivered by the 31st of October. Nigel Farage on Friday night at a Brexit party meeting said we should take a knife to the pen pushers, by which he means the civil servants. I mean, this is so incendiary, and it is escalating, and I suspect it's going to get worse before it gets better. And my heart goes out to Jo Cox's family. I met her a couple of times when she worked for Oxfam. She was an extraordinary young woman, but I really fear that not only MPs could be killed in the weeks ahead, but large-scale rioting that we haven't seen in the UK in the modern era.
But, you know, people are picking out, well, obviously Cummings stands out. It's from all sides. I was watching Questions and Answers on the BBC the other night, and there was a Labour man in the audience, and he looked like he was about to have cardiac arrest. He was so angry, like he was bordering on incoherence, and he said, I voted to leave. Ginny Miller was on, you blocked me. That was democracy. But, I mean, so it's not just a one-sided event, yes?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. But if you look at, if Boris Johnson and the Brexiteers continue with this narrative that, for example, the UK is a supplicant member state that was forced to join the EU, that has not enjoyed, being the leader of the single market for, since the 90s, that had last year the best Commission portfolio they could have been given, which was to protect capital markets union, that they've had a really enjoyable time over the past 40 years as leading members of the European Union. Instead, they have this narrative that they were basically forced to stay in there, that the EU owes them something, that this Benn Act is a surrender bill.
But the people voted.
The people voted
to leave.
Absolutely, but they didn't. But
you may not agree with it.
No, it's not that
it may not be in Ireland's interest.
But it's not that I don't vote. It's not that I don't agree with one. I don't have a problem with it per se. What I have a problem with is the fact that they had obligations in that leaving that weren't explained to people. When it comes to, for example, the Good Friday Agreement, and also when you look at the referendum results, 52-48, generally speaking, you might interpret that by saying that they wanted to stay relatively close to the European Union. What is being put on the table about getting Brexit done and clean break? That's nonsense. I mean, that's just insane. So the fact that we have to then, kowtow to this mentality when you look at the Operation Yellow Hammer. And the impact that's going to have on the UK, and people just willfully ignoring that because they were told 3.5 years ago they could have this unicorn led Brexit. None of it makes sense. So the narrative is just incorrect.
Okay, Ronan?
Well, I think if you want to have the kind of back and forth and compromise that Mary was talking about, what you need are institutions, and you're shaping up for a people versus parliament election. And the problem with, I think, very movingly and touchingly, Ms. Ledbetter there, was talking about that both sides have been fueling this. But this is about referendum democracy. This unleashes a binary choice. It means it sidelines issues around discussion, and it sidelines even parties. So the parties have been sidelined. They've been taken over by Brexit. Parliament has been sidelined. And there is no way, when it turns into a leave-remain binary choice, there's very few ways to have those back-and-forth discussions and to channel our differences.
This is true. But, I mean, from our own experience, and, I mean, some of our experience is, not that admirable. We voted no twice and we were told go back and get it right. So we're not saints when it comes to respecting results in that way. But I put it to you that the various things we have voted on to do with the European Union, I doubt if more than a couple of dozen Irish people, no more than British people on this one, actually read the treaties, went in, analysed it, reflected on it. I mean,
we have an awful lot of commentary in this country that is now looking at a virtuous Ireland, awful Britain, we are so much better there, they've gone backwards, we're going forwards. And I don't think that's true. Look, I remember the Lisbon Treaty referendum in 2008, and I remember the posters that said Ireland will be in NATO, there'll be abortion, there'll be a 50 cent minimum wage. We seem to love referendums in this country, but actually
but
it's more by luck
that
we've got, on good, we've got out of it. I think Ireland would be a big mistake if we think that the pathologies that brought about Brexit are only present in Britain.
No, I think you're dead right. Yeah, I think, I mean, people were concerned about conscription in the first Lisbon Treaty. I know people personally have voted against it for that reason. And again, abortion. So it can easily happen in any country. I think even Emmanuel Macron said it would happen.
So in other words, we shouldn't adjust our hate.
Macron himself said that it could happen in France.
Nice and Lisbon, second time round, the government understood that everybody had been so complacent. And those two successor campaigns were entirely different. And if you look at the data, people tell you they felt much more informed, much more confident about what they were voting on. And also they were voting on things that were substantively different. So the government had gone to the EU
well,
and
they
said,
weren't
we need
substantively
different. Well, they were. For example, in 2008, there was a proposal that would have seen the European Commission reduced in size so that we wouldn't have a commissioner once in 5 years. It was because of the Irish diplomacy
intervention.
And intervention that changed. And by the way, we're now headed for a commission with Phil Hogan as the most senior commissioner in the trade portfolio. And that's partly because of the diplomacy and intervention that took place in 2008.
The other two referenda, of course, were different in the sense that if we hadn't passed them, we would have held up the whole of the European Union, whereas whatever regret you might have at Britain leaving, the EU will continue on. But I think one of the things that this has really shown, firstly, there's been a positive in that Irish people know very well a huge amount about the EU at this stage, and that is a positive and reflected in the figure. But I think, Marion, what is shown by this is the lack of trust in politicians to represent the interest of the country in an institution that they have been members of for the last 40 years. There is no way that you can explain the incredible intricacies of membership of the European Union. But you have to trust that your interests will be represented by the people you elect. And to say that take back control, I mean, the member states have total control over
but
the European Commission.
But the citizens don't seem to feel that. Now, I know feel is a very ephemeral word, but, I mean, people voted in Britain for a good reason.
But on the basis of a completely false prospectus with all kinds of
criminal
activity.
There's no point in denying that right across Europe, with the growth of the right in particular, that there is a big suspicion about Europe. Europe, like Brussels, dictates.
Yeah, but that's entirely erroneous, and it's actually not backed up by data. In Ireland, for example, the latest Red Sea poll in April, which is conducted every year, shows about 90% of people support membership. And if you look at the European Parliament election results, go back to the early part of the year, there was a lot of fear about a resurgence of the far right, and that would really matter.
Do you
in the
think
Parliament.
That's gone away?
It hasn't gone away, but if you look at the results of the Parliament elections, many of those far-right parties actually didn't do very well. They actually regressed.
Let me go back to Kim, if I may, because we've drifted on to Irish matters now, but it shows how all countries have their varying debates on these matters. I mean, you've made very clear where you're coming from. But as you watched the week, and presumably you will be watching the Tory conference and whatever happens next week, how do you think this has affected Britain internationally?
Oh, I think it's had a really unfortunate negative effect on how people will perceive Great Britain. I think it's had an unfortunate effect on how, on the country as a whole. And I think there's going to be an awful lot that needs to be done to rebuild our country. And that's why I'm saying that has to start from now. It has to start from everybody taking this step back and looking at how they behave from this point going forward. What I'm really clear about is I don't want Joe's name to ever be used to silence robust passionate debate, because we're very fortunate that we live in a democracy where we have that freedom. And what's going on in your studio this morning is an example of that, and that's wonderful to see. People have got different opinions. We can thrash it out. We can talk about it. And that is what Joe would want, and that is what we want. Nor do I want, however, Joe's name to be used to score political points, because that is also not helpful. We must never forget that Joe was murdered. You know, 5 minutes from where I live, in the street, she was shot and stabbed to death. She was a serving politician. We don't want any other family to have to go through what we've been through and what we continue to go through.
Right.
But that's a very fine balance to get those two things, isn't it? That we have to remember that, we have to make sure it doesn't happen again, but we also have to have these robust debates and discussions. And we need to be really clear that there is genuine fear amongst our politicians at the moment. They are facing a huge amount of abuse. They are facing threats to their staff, to their families. You know, and because of that is their reality.
Yeah.
So we've all got this responsibility to have these passionate discussions, have these important debates, but to do it in a civilised, respectful manner.
Okay, Kim Ledbetter. By the way, how are her children?
They're doing really well. I mean, they're very tough little cookies. They're very much like Joe. They're doing really well. But a week like this week rocks us. It's really rocked my parents this week, I have to be honest. They found it extremely upsetting. But, you know, we're a strong family. We pull together. We've got each other. And we've got a very good network of friends and people who've looked after us for 3 years.
Okay. Kim Ledbetter, thank you very, very much indeed for talking to us. And we'll take a break.